Here's your email, Larry. A lot of people email me, and 90% of the time they never show. They get busy traveling around, etc., etc. So I'm happy to see you keep your word. A man of his word. Okay. Yomo, I turned them on. Okay? Red, good? Okay. Ready to roll? All right. Today is... Wow, the year is flying, a new year ready, January 7th, 2019. And I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and those listening across the world, all the way down under to Australia. All right, it's hard to leave yesterday's shiur. It was exciting. And, you know, there was a question a number of years ago. And it was a real problem. Time flies, it may even be 10 years ago already. But a whole, you know, in America, they want to take kids and show them the real Torah centers. So I've been in Borough Park on Shabbat, and you have kids coming in a whole group from Mexico, from Texas, you know, showing them Borough Park. All right, Borough Park is Borough Park. It's not the Bnei Brak, it's not Yerushalayim, but it is an experience for these kids. I remember meeting someone on the train on Sunday or Monday, and an older man, a successful person, and his brother became Haredi, Hasidic, and he came to that. You know, he was so impressed. So they take kids to Lakewood. So remember what happened on a Friday? They were taking the buses going to Lakewood, and it started to snow. And the snow, they were crawling on the turnpike. And as early as they left, it looked very bad. They're never going to reach Lakewood before Shabbat. And what do you do? Remember this? So there were two, there was one group of yeshiva group, I believe it was from Staten Island, and they called Lakewood, and Suresh Yeshiva got on the phone. They never got the name. He was never identified, and he told them, as long as the driver is not Jewish, just continue till you get to Lakewood. It turned out that the driver happened to be Jewish. He was Russian, and they took for granted he's not Jewish, the usual story. But that was the psak. There was a group of Chabad girls on a bus going to Lakewood, and they, Taka, had the bus stop, got off the bus, contacted Chabad and one of the kehilot on the way, not far off the turnpike, and they were put up for Shabbat, the whole Shabbat. The Chabad shot into action, like with the LL plane. But an interesting shaila, what would you paskin? So you see, with once you're bederech and there's sakaner, it could be, there was somach on what we saw yesterday. You go with a shayara, you go with a group, and suddenly you hit sakana, Shabbat doesn't exist. It's a very interesting question. You know, there's no black and white, because that sugya lends itself to so many different interpretations. And I was thinking, I showed you the Aruch HaShulchan, I hope someone can correct me. I mean, maybe I'm misreading, but from what I've seen, the Aruch HaShulchan, he was the biggest machmir of all, even more machmir than the Mishnah Berurah. And as I told you yesterday, when Chovev Torah, its antecedents, began, Eidah, remember the word Eidah, and Saul Berman, my classmate, we got to translate the Aruch HaShulchan into English. Well, I spoke about it yesterday. But Besof HaShul Davah, he wasn't always so makil. All right, please, Aaron. Get into the less important factors of life, the history of Torah. Today's a very interesting shiur. And in relation to synagogue council, I'm not going to really deal at depth with the Rav, because I'm leaving that when I deal with the RCA. Because with RCA, that becomes a major issue that to a certain degree haunts the RCA until today. It's an issue that was never solved. It's 60 years, more than 60 years already, and that issue, time and again, it comes up, and one faction, another faction, And even as now, in the RCA, there are many people, among them Talmidim of mine, who are looking to join and be active in the Rabbinical Alliance. It's more right-wing, they're more at home. All right. There's no question after World War II, Reb Lazer Silva, I hate to use the word, but you'll see today, to a certain degree, becomes redundant. The world is shifting, the world is changing. Yes, you do great things in life, but time moves on, and you have to accept that. I was walking yesterday up the block, the catchment, Chamariv and Yatamar. So there's the sushi place. And then obviously an American boy and girl, kids studying here for the year, are coming out of the sushi place, and they think I'm going in. They see a person coming. I might look American too, living here 50 years. Doesn't change the American look. My wife and I once tried to analyze, why do Americans look different? Our conclusion was they use soap so many times on their face, they're a little lighter than Israelis. All right, I don't know if it's true or not, but you can think about it. So the kids are holding the door for me. So I say, no, I'm going up the hill. And then we reach the light, and they're going to cross against the light. I said, no, this is not New York. The drivers are not used to people crossing against the light. Don't play games here. Wait for the light. And then I said, I'm going to shul. I know, what are you doing? And then these kids are studying here for the year. And I told them, they asked me, well, what do you do? I said, well, I've been teaching Torah for 60 years. Where do you teach? You know, right away. So I mentioned Gris. All right, they knew a little bit about Gris. They never heard the name Rakefet. And when I got into Davin Mincha, I thought to myself, you know, it humbles you, a little bit nevadic. I said, 30 years ago, you meet a kid that age studying in Israel, 20 years ago even, you mentioned Rakefet. Oh, I had him, or his friend had him, but that's it, gone and forgotten. That's life. I gave up all my series. I gave up all my collegiate teaching in 2002 to concentrate on the Kollel, concentrate on the Shiurim, and to write more. And life moves on. So here's poor Reb Lazer Silva, what that man accomplished. But here's Reb Aaron Cutler. Here's the shift. Darf man reden Yiddish, or do you speak English? And you see right there, it's two worlds that are starting to pull apart. Now, nothing pulled it apart greater than the issue that we left off with last week. And by the way, a lot has been said how the issue began and who asked the question. I believe what I told you last week is correct historically. I've spoken to the people involved. But when I come back to the Rav, later on with RCA, I'll give you a little bit more details or theories that have come up. But there's no question that the Rav did not give Mo Feuerstein an answer. And he said the Halachic Commission will have to consider it. And I think the Rav understood it's a politically dynamite. Whatever's going to happen here, you can't come out of it feeling happy. It's going to lead to machloket. Reb Aaron Cutler was not hesitant. And here is the statement I translated into English. We have been asked by a number of rabbis in the country and by alumni and rabbinical graduates of the yeshiva, is it permissible to participate with and be a member of the New York Board of Rabbis and similar groups in other communities which are composed of Reform and conservative rabbis? Having gathered together to clarify this matter has been ruled by the undersigned that is forbidden by the law of our sacred Torah to be a member and to participate in such an organization. And the statement goes on, another paragraph on synagogue council. It was written in, most Pasquales are written in Hebrew. It's written in Hebrew, but I can assure you the conversation preparing it was in Yiddish, and I was the first one to translate. This already appeared in the Silva era in 1981. It's been later Jewish Observer translated. You'll find them most translations, in other words, when they translate, they looked at mine, might have made a change here and there, but essentially my translation is absolutely correct. And may the Almighty have mercy on his people and close the breaches in Torah life, and may we be worthy of the elevation of the glory of our sacred Torah and our people Israel. Now, who signed this? all the famous Rashi Yeshiva, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Gedalia Shur of Torah Vadas. Whoever went to Torah Vadas knows who I'm talking about. Anyone go to Chaim Berlin here? Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner signed it. You talk Lakewood, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein signed it. You go right down the Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Bloch and Rabbi Katz, they signed it. The Nevadika Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yaffin signed it. More important, from the YU faculty, two very prominent members signed it, Rabbi David Lifshitz and Rabbi Mendel Zaks. And here I'll just to give you a little bit insight again. I lived the year, I knew the people, and I believe I'm giving you an honest estimation. Whenever someone tries to interpret, you know, you can say you're deciphering it through your own thinking. Here I think honestly, Reb Mendel Zaks never was at home in YU. He wound up in YU because he needed Panasa. Rav Shmuel Belkin, his Talmud from Rotten, second president, Rosh Yeshiva, who was a big Goymel Chesed, took him in, gave him the task of being the Bochein, and he did a wonderful job in the Yeshiva. Hitaka was the Bochein, it was an experience, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, Nimgereta Alitvish Yiddish, Hakutim Sabis, okay, it was an experience. But how do I know he wasn't totally at home? First of all, I was friendly with with his youngest son, who was actually, I believe, born in America. I'm just thinking, I believe he was born in America. If not, he came to America at a very young. He has to be 2 or 3 younger than I am. And I remember his attitude. One time he was cursing and maledicting YU and people like myself. And I said to him, but your father was part of Yeshiva University. And he gave me the classic answer, it was a good place to take a paycheck, quote, end quote. That's a very interesting answer. But I'll bring you a stronger proof. When Reb Moshe Shatzkis died, you now were left with 2 people on the Smicha committee. You were left with the Rav, Moriu Rebbe, and Reb Shmuel Belkin. They wanted a third. No, you needed someone of stature. They asked Reb Mendel Zaks to be a member of the Smicha committee, and he refused. And that is very interesting. And you can understand why he refused, because it's one thing to be a Bochein, it's another to give Smicha to guys like Rakefet and his classmates and Saul Berman. Who knows what will come out of them. And all right, Rakefet is a Mizrachist, Nishkefelech today. In retrospect, it's not the worst, but he remained a shtickle frum and all right. But Eda, Chovevei Torah, your smicha is signed by who?
Rabbi Soloveitchik
and Rabbi Belkin. Okay, so you understand what I'm saying. You're missing a third signature. Mm-hmm. I got a third with a separate smicha, because I felt you need 3 signatures. I went to the mashgiach, right? I had a special relationship with him. But you're the proof to what I'm saying. Reb David Lifshitz, on the other hand, was totally at home in the yeshiva. As a matter of fact, he was a Yerapeyesher, a Mira. In Mir, you should know, he was left at. He was considered too frum. I spoke to the Mira. He had, they used to call it shtick, that it was, they couldn't tolerate. Whatever it was, I don't know if he wore Bekesher and Shabbos, etc. He was always a little different. And he knew how to reinvent himself. When the Rav switched to English and it ended Torah in America, according to Rakefet's thinking, when the Rav switched to English, so the Rosh Yeshiva were in a panic. Could you picture Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelli giving a shiur in English? Can you picture Rabbi Noach Bonstein giving a shiur in English? Can you picture Rabbi Shmuel Leizervol giving a shiur in English? It was impossible. But Rabbi David Lifshitz reinvented himself. He spoke beautiful Hebrew. And by the time the Rav switched to English, the impact of the kids starting to come to Keren Biafna for a year, kids were coming to Keren Biafna already. And as time moved on, everyone already is coming to Israel. They start to know Hebrew. they're coming back. And it's not like today. Today you can live in Israel for 50 years and not speak a word of Hebrew. You understand? My mother lived here many, many years, and she never had to speak Hebrew, although she mastered some very basic words in Hebrew. If I used to get on a bus, maybe she could ask directions. Maybe. Underline the maybe. And my mother lived here from 77 till she died in 2012. She died for New Year's Day, 2012, if I'm not mistaken. So she lived here many years. But today, you come here, the kids come to Torah Shraga. Who speaks Hebrew here? The whole building is in English. Even those whose native language is Hebrew break their teeth in English. So in those days, you went to Kerem B'Yavne. That was the only yeshiva, Hadarom, but it was totally Hebrew. It was a different experience. So Reb David reinvented himself. So here you have an individual who wasn't exactly totally Haredi, totally right-wing. He was never a member of Agudat Yisrael. You should know that. With all the switch, and he was Masada Kedushin at your wedding, am I right?
Rabbi Price, but
Rabbi Lifshitz was at your wedding, yeah. All right? So you know what I'm talking about. Rabbi David, the Tzuvah, he was at my wedding, the Tzuvah Al-Karab, wonderful, wonderful individual, literally filled with warmth, a Rabbi Levine person. But he signed on. So you see, these two YU people carry weight. Who didn't sign? So obviously the Rav didn't sign. And here let me just give one sentence, and we'll come back to it in RCA context. The Rav didn't sign on, the Rav was asked to sign. Again, there are many versions that they held up the Yisa, hoping the Rav would sign on, and the Rav did not sign on. And the Rav's reasoning was very simple, but a lot more difficult halacha l'maisa. The Rav's reasoning was that which unites us is much more important than that which divides us, and he felt that synagogue council, as long as it doesn't make statements on halacha, everything else we have to be united on: anti-Semitism, support of Israel, issues like that, Russian Jewry, we don't have to be separate. Halacha, the synagogue council answered the Rav's demands, because the synagogue council had a clause that no halachic decision could be made public unless it's unanimous, which simply means that the Orthodox had veto power. You with me, though? That's the way the synagogue council functioned. And that simply was the Rav's opinion. At first, the Rav was quiet, didn't say anything, just didn't sign. Dole Yisrael approached Reb Moshe, Reb Nelson Kamenetsky writes about this in Making of a Godly. He doesn't mention names, but it's obvious what he's talking about. The Gedolei Yisrael approached Reb Moshe El Zoreden Mitzayn Kuzina. He should speak with the Rav, his cousin. And Reb Moshe made the statement, I'll say it in Yiddish, then I'll translate it. We have a rule in the Gemara: when someone is silent, it means he admits it. If I come over and I say to Jack, "You owe me $100," and Jack just smiles at me, it's a sign he owes me. That's the Gemara. And Rav Moshe says, "Well, das mal, this time, I'm afraid my cousin's silence is really admitting that he disagrees, not that he agrees." And this is Reb Moshe, and this is the Rav. And we'll come back to the Rav. What's interesting is, and this fits right in with the theme we have developed, that Reb Lazer Silva was the last of the Mohegans. He was the last of the great Rabbanim in America who was not a Rosh Yeshiva. And what's an added proof? He was the only non-Rosh Yeshiva asked to sign on the prohibition. In other words, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, all the Gedolei Hador in America felt that they have to have Reb Lazer Silva. He is an outstanding Talmud Chacham leader. We owe him our lives, what he did with Vat Hatzalah, what he did with Eguras HaRabbanim. They asked him to sign. and Reb Lezer Silva refused. Now, why did he refuse? And here I can tell you, endless members of the family explained it to me. I would have figured it out on my own, but it's good to be able to say I have authoritative sources. In principle, he agreed. He absolutely agreed. Reform, conservative, we all suffer from this question, and we all have opinions, but there's not one Torah Jew in the world who wants to leave the idea that we're all equal, pay your nickel and take your choice. Torah is Torah, demands, commands, respect, Naseh v'Nishma, we already pledged ourselves. But Reb Lezer saw what was happening in America, the split between the newcomers, Reb Aaron Cutler, forget about the Satmarov, but there's now such a swing politically to the right, he felt that one of the purposes of this declaration was to embarrass Yeshiva University and to embarrass the Rav. And he wanted no part of that. His own children went to Yeshiva University. His son, Reb David Leib Silva, the Rav of Harrisburg, was one of the outstanding graduates of Yeshiva University. His other son was a medical doctor, was a member of the first graduating class of Yeshiva College. And his son-in-law was a great Mizrachiite. He wanted no part of slapping Yeshiva University's face, and certainly not to embarrass the Rav. And you see, from the other side, the other point of view, the Rav was a problem for them. And I can illustrate it very simply. The greatest moment of Torah in America, and we've never equaled it, with all due respects to great graduates and great speakers and great rabbanim and public talkers, and I hate to say it, myself included, we're pale images of the Rav on the Yotzeit Shir. Do you remember the Yotzeit Shir? Read the world of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik. Read my description. I quote Julie Berman. I describe the Yotzeit Shir. It's beyond words. Even a movie couldn't do it justice. Remember, the auditorium, the Lampert Auditorium, the Shir was 7:30 at night, 8 o'clock at night. If you came into the Lampert Auditorium 9:30 in the morning, hundreds upon hundreds of chairs had signs up, Sfarim, hats, jackets, people reserving seats hours in advance. And it was an humble. Now, kids snuck in from every other yeshiva. You understand? When you read the memoir literature today, they all admit how they came, they put their jackets over their heads, they hats over their eyes. But from all the yeshiva, they came to hear the Rav. I can give you a simple example. Here in Israel, I became very close to Reb Lezer Kugel. When we got involved, came back from our first trip to Russia, so I helped organize Shvutame. To be exact, it's reorganized. There was a certain Russian division in Itri, which ultimately becomes Shvutame, but this was reorganizing it and putting it on the map, 1981. So Reb Lezer Kugel left his position at the Harry Fishel Institute training rabbis. It's a Jew. Reb Lezer should live me well. He's a Jew in his 90s today. He's a Jew who knows Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch by heart. Okay? This is Reb Lezer Kugel. He's Rabbi Levine's grandson-in-law. Rabbi Yashub's nephew. Okay? Try to locate what I'm saying. So we became very close until today. And he said he learned a lot from me. I think what he means, he learned from me that one could be part of the Western world and strive to be a Gon in Torah and a Yerei mind to the ultimate. He once met Reb Aaron Lichtenstein at the Kotel, and he didn't know, he didn't go up, he didn't know Reb Aaron, but people pointed out, that's Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. And there's Reb Aaron with his sons, and he's going through, he's raised the issue with them. Rav Kugel couldn't believe it. They had finished mincha, waiting for Marav. It's when they lived around the corner from me, Rehov Brody. And the Rabbaran, what if you take someone else's siddur? Are you allowed? Let's say you know it's his. Can you take it? What the ramifications are? Someone else's talis. Someone else's tefillin. And Rabbaran is going through Rishonim with them. Rabbaran Nikola Torah Kula with every Rishon. His knowledge was unbelievable. And Rab Lezer sees something like that. It opened his vista to what can come out of YU. So one time I said, I'm going to give you a treat. Chupad it's called. And I gave him a tape of the Rav on a tshuva drasha. And he heard that. He couldn't get over it. He was said, never in his life. And he's Darat Yerushalmi and all the Dashanim and all the Magidim. But nothing comes anywhere near the Rav. His Yiddish, the drasha, the depth, the Yotzai Shul. So you see, it presented a problem for the right wing. The Rav is still there. The Rav was there before them. The Rav has made an impact. And they challenging, put up or shut up. Are you with us or against us? It's like the angel appealing to Yeshua. Halatzareinu atah, are you with us or with our enemies? The Gemara Lan Balayla HaBa'emek, the Gemara in Megillah. Reb Lezer felt it was not just an honest statement against the Reform and Conservative, but Reb Lezer felt that there was a political feeling here, a political thrust, and he did not want to be part of it. All right. Now, this story with the Agudas HaRabbanim, with the Issa, it's a lot deeper than that. And here we come to the, I would say, the Young Turks, the revolution, the change, the Agudas HaRabbanim that we've spent 2 years talking about them, 1902, all the rabbis united, 1952 already, the writing is on the wall. The rabbis do not count. It is the Rashi Yeshiva. 1952, convention of the Agudas HaRabbanim, and I can still be impartial. I'm still a kid. When I get to 56, I'm going to tell you what we naughty kids did. 1952, the convention, Reb Lezer Suva is on in years already. And he gets up, the convention is held, Pashat Vayishlach, and Reb Lezer says, for so many decades, Vayishlach, you sent me out to build Torah in America, to do the Var HaTzalah, to do Agudat Yisrael. Now, however, it comes, Vayetzei, I have to go back to Pashat Vayetzei, and go home, leave, concentrate on Cincinnati, my writings, prepare my svarim for publication. I don't want to be president again. Rabbi Israel Rosenberg, here's Reb Lezer saying he wants to leave. He already says he wants to leave. But the Balabatim, the Agudas HaRabbanim won't let them. They re-elect them, but they do elect as the third rabbi, Rabbi Moshe Rosen. Rabbi Moshe Rosen takes the place of Rabbi Israel Leventhal, who had just died. Rabbi Moshe Rosen already is a different type of Rav than either Silva or Rosenberg. Rabbi Moshe Rosen has a little shul in Brooklyn, but he's learning day and night. Publishing Sfarim, a Gon Adir. He had a son, Reb Chaim Rosen, also big Talmud Chacham. This already was an image, not of a leader, not of Ezra's Torah, not of Agudat Yisrael, not of Var HaTzalah, but this is Reb Moshe Rosen, who sits and learns day and night. That was 1950. To 1956, the new election, the world has changed. We want to change. We want an Agudas HaRabbanim more active, more right-wing, not involved with RCA, not involved with more liberal element of Torah in America. And they start lining up votes, campaigning, and I'm already 56. I mean, let me just figure it out. 55, I graduated. 56, I'm in Reb Shmuel Lazer Volk Shir. It's already an important college here. From there I go to the Rav, and I've just been with Reb Noach Bornstein and Reb Yeruchim Gerelik. These people were as distant from Agudat HaRabbanim politics as I am from the moon. They were totally involved in the yeshiva. Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik was a clout to her. He was a little bit more involved, but the others, they rallied the forces. Rabbi Henoch Fishman, everyone turned down for the Agudat HaRabbanim convention. I believe it was in Far Rockaway in a kosher hotel. I don't believe that I don't stay here where it was, but that's what my memory tells me. Transportation was provided, and all these rabbanim were up all night. The slate that was proposed was voted down, and after a long, long night, a new presidium was elected. Reb Lazer Silva, no one would vote against him. He had done so many favors for so many people. Baal Kocho, he was re-elected. But he was now joined by Reb David Lifshitz. We spoke about Reb David. Reb David Lifshitz, show me the shul he was rabbi of. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. He was not a Rav. For the first time in the history of Agudas HaRabbanim, a Rosh Yeshiva is a member of the Presidium. The third individual, a name you all know, my mentor in the rabbinate, Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. Rav Teitz, here you have a classic example. Yudapeyesh Rav, successful in America. His success in building Elizabeth is second only to Reb Lazer Silva in Cincinnati. And he was not an RCA person. He was not a liberal. He was not that open-minded. I can still remember with these ears when the RCA came out with their Siddur, their translation, their Sabbath and Holy Day Siddur, translated by the Solar Pool. And there in Brich Shmei, Bar Lehin, and it implies we don't believe in Jesus, right or wrong. Look at the translation, Son of God. The Agudas HaRabbanim went crazy that even the thought that you might mention a reference alluding to Jesus in a Siddur. And I still remember on WEVD, by now I was listening to the Jewish radio to improve my Yiddish. I had to know Yiddish. I had to learn Yiddish. I told you. Seventh grade on, I started listening Fridays to the Yiddish. My grandfather listened to the Jewish radio. I listened to the Jewish radio. And I can still remember Rav Teitz fuming and cursing and maledicting the RCA Siddur. And he was still a Rav, but here already there was a gestalt of Agudas HaRabbanim. So all night the debate went back and forth until the white smoke, pardon the illusion, came up from the hotel and a new presidium, Rabbi Silva, Lifshitz, and Teitz. Now, let me smack my face in retrospect, going back to 56, what a nasty kid you were. So we weren't stupid kids already. For 56, I'm already first, second year college. You think you know everything. Simon, you think you're 50 times smarter than any teacher and any professor and any Rebbe. You understand? That's youth. That's youth. Okay. That is youth. And oh boy, we knew what was going on. And the next morning we made it our business to go over to every Rebbe, every Rebbe. And you know, these are Rebbeim, and Rebbeim love students. Without students, they can't be Rebbeim. Students can't know Torah without Rebbeim. There's a certain mutual love here. It's like a mother giving a child the bottle. I see my great-grandchildren and what my granddaughters and granddaughters-in-law do for them. All right, this is life. All right, this is the way life works. So we go over to every Rebbe. Rebbe, wie fühlt man den Morgen? Did you sleep during the night? And they look at us, you know, they don't want to admit they were in Far Rockaway at the hotel, caught up in all, what are you, the hell are you doing with the politics? Your business is to teach. Let those idiots, you're involved with that? Oh, you're a member of Nachmanstein. Rebbe, wie ist gewend der Nacht? A bissl geschlaft? Oh boy, what we pulled on them. Rabbi Ruchim Geralik, you couldn't pull much because he would maledict you so quickly, he'd hit you so hard that you had to run for cover. But Reb Nayach, Reb Henich Fishman, all they could do was a smile on their face as if to say, all right, you caught us, you win. All right? But the Agudas HaRabbanim is shifting gears. That is 1956. But at the next convention, 4 years later, yes, Rav Silva, Rav Lifshitz, Rav Teitz, and they make the presidium, they expand it to have 5 members. You want to guess who the 2 additional people are? Reb Aaron Cutler and Reb Moshe Feinstein. So by 1960, you now have a presidium of Agudas HaRabbanim, 3 Rosh Yeshiva, 2 practicing rabbis, 3-2. Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb David Lifshitz, and then Reb Lazer Silva and Reb Pinchas Teitz. Reb Aaron dies shortly thereafter, 1962, and Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky of Teira Vidas, Beis Medrash Elyon, takes Reb Aaron's place. And from that moment on, it's a different Agudas HaRabbanim Labriyut, a different stress, a different outlook. It is much more right wing. And here again, the problem which haunts the Agudas HaRabbanim and gives birth to RCA, the problem comes up time and again. Time and again, the Agudas HaRabbanim is criticizing the American rabbis. 1958, at their annual convention, Reb Lazer is trying so hard keep the channels of communication not only open, but mutual respect. And I quote from Reb Lazer, "We have come to appreciate the achievements of the young rabbis who are not our members. After all, they are our children and grandchildren. In the past, we have never spurned them and always worked together in mutual respect. There was never enmity or rancor between us. Such have been our deeds in the past. I trust we will continue to unite with all the scholars in our generation. Together, we will construct the fence around the Torah. We will stand guard in unison with all our brethren to whom the Torah is dear." And as much as Reb Lazer, and those are beautiful words, and absolutely true, his kids went to Yeshiva College. Many of the greatest Agudas HaRabbanim people, their kids went to Yeshiva College. Their kids went to Ritz. But the Agudas HaRabbanim, the next convention, anyone who's a member of the New York Board of Rabbis cannot be a member of the Agudas HaRabbanim. Anyone who is in synagogue council We look down upon them. They are transgressing. Now listen to the Rosh Yeshiva. We demand that the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations leave synagogue council. And you see, the die is cast. RCA people, most of them are in the Board of Rabbis. Go out of New York, sometimes your only way to have colleagues and friends, people you can talk to honestly, not balabatim, is to belong to a Board of Rabbis. Cities like Newark, all right, there we had tens and tens of Orthodox rabbis. None of us belonged to the General Board of Rabbis. But that's Newark, where you had, the one time Newark had the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat of any city in the United States. Hard to believe what became of Newark, but there was endless machlekes there over Hechsherim. Oh, what went on there, Rabbi Konvich and Rabbi Mendelssohn and others. And all right, the children and grandchildren wound up suburban Essex County, had the London 60s, 70s, go back to the 50s, the largest, most prestigious conservative and reform temples in the world were in suburban Essex County. That all came out of Newark, which at one time had the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat. So this is the Agudas HaRabbanim. They've charted their course. They're moving their way. They're making demands. And it's very hard to see that there isn't a chasm, a tremendous breach between the Yudapayish Rabbanim, the American rabbis, and all that is involved in being a Torah Jew on the West, in the Western world, on the American scene. Now, an issue comes up during this period where once again it gives the Agudas HaRabbanim a chance to show how they will not go and be friends and deal with the conservative movement. And this too is an issue which haunts us until today. We'll deal with it in more depth when we deal with RCA, but I have to touch upon it with the conservative movement because they went public in 57, actually issued a tremendous harem against anyone using the conservative ketuvah. Now, the story with the conservative ketuvah is very simple. The problem of a man inflicted aguna, if I may use that term, is not new. It began already as Jews became wealthy in America. Lo aleinu, and Jews look for money and people want to become wealthy quickly. Why not hold up the woman who was your wife? The marriage didn't work out. Divorce becomes more popular. When I was growing up, you never heard of anyone getting divorced. To get divorced in New York, you had to prove adultery. It was unbelievable. Today, it's practically, you never hear of anyone not getting divorced. It's just when I meet Michael and I meet people, how long have you been married? They look at you. We're hitting 60 years soon, Be'ezrat Hashem. How can it be? All right, this is the world. But then the Jewish mind, because of the get situation, took advantage, and no tiki, no washi. We want money. Without money, you don't get a get. It's like the Chinaman says, you don't have the ticket for your laundry, you don't get back your wash. No tiki, no washi, no money, no gitti. It's a very sad situation, and we all suffer until this very moment. Now, the conservatives came up with an idea in the early 50s, the conservative ketubah. What does that mean? They added a whole clause to the regular ketubah, and the clause says that if the marriage should break up, you can go online and get all this information. If you're a lawyer, you'll appreciate it. But if the marriage should break up and a party wants a divorce, then you have to appear before the Beit Din of the Jewish Theological Seminary. And if you refuse to appear, then every day or every week or every month, you owe the other party money. There's a fine placed upon you for every month that you don't appear before the Beit Din of the Rabbinical Assembly, which is the rabbinical arm of the conservative movement. you have it, let's say, $1,000 fine, whatever it is, and it builds up. And it's a legal document which you hope will be enforced by the courts. Now, I have to tell you in retrospect, and a lot of people have said this, I'm not saying anything revolutionary, there was nothing wrong with this idea. Charlie, a ketuva, the oraita, the rabbanon. It's the rabbanon. What's the whole purpose of a ketuva? Mori, to give the woman dignity. Look into Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra. I mentioned it yesterday. Someone asked me if the Aruch HaShulchan wrote an all of Shulchan. I said someone thought he only wrote an Aruch Chaim. He wrote all Dalet Chalakim. But if you go to Eben Ezra, you'll see there's a whole section, a big section that he didn't write on. Why? It deals with Ketubah, of localities. And all that is not applicable today. It's like the Yerushalmi Ketubah. My daughter, I have a daughter who's an artist, does Ketubah, so she's preparing the Ketubah for my grandson's wedding, Be'ezrat Hashem, next month. So again, she asked me, do I write in what's in the parentheses? I said, no. You know what I'm talking about, the parentheses. Look at the Jerusalem Ketubah from the rabbinate. You'll see in parentheses, not to leave Israel, not to do this, not to, if they said, the Rar and all that goes with it. All that is no longer applicable. We go back to the original Ketubah, which was the one that was worked out already in the Gemara and improved upon through the generations. So what's wrong with making an addition? The Ketubah itself is one addition after another. So make an addition. The truth is, Reb Shaul Lieberman, who is not a, he taught at the seminary, but he said he himself was a frum Jew, a Gaon Adia. Rav Shaul Lieberman said, I want someone to show me that it's forbidden to add or alter a ketubah. And he was right, I'll repeat them. But there was one tremendous problem. What Beit Din did they talk about? The Beit Din of JTS. Now you have to remember, back in the 50s, it's not today. Today, no one in the world is going to think JTS is orthodox, JTS is frum, JTS cares about halacha. No one in the world will think that. But you have to remember, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, it was a different JTS. As a matter of fact, on that based in sat a Jew by the name of Boaz Cohen. Please, make believe you heard the name, so the ignorant will pass for the wise. Boaz Cohen was a first-rate Talmud Chacham. He was the Masada Gittin for the JTS. His Gittin were accepted by every Beis Din in the world. They knew who the man was. By the way, I met grandchildren 100% from Boaz Cohen. Look it up. So, JTS then... See, they were trying to cast an image. Where from? All right, certain compromises were made. This is America. But you can depend upon our Beit Din. And the Agudas HaRabbanim totally, absolutely opposed them. And that concept to appear before JTS, who are they? What are they? What's their connection to Torah? I have to tell you, and we'll come back to this when we deal with RCA, as much as the Agudas Rabbanim was opposed, Rabbinical Council of America was opposed. And even Rabbi Rachman co-authored a famous article in Tradition, one of the earliest traditions, that this clause will not hold up in a secular court. All right? I don't know whether it has held up, hasn't held up. We play with this issue until today. What you have today is the RCA Ketubah, which is not much different in theory than what the conservatives try to do, except the Beis Din is an orthodox Beis Din. Yes, Morty.
Why didn't the Agudas HaRabbanim come up with their own
Ketubah then? The Agudas HaRabbanim we haven't had a solution that we can talk about until this moment. It's not for lack of try. Reb Moshe tried. Everyone tries. Your humble servant. You know how many times I've been asked, and it's an issue. You know, I just got a question. Someone is writing about Rabbeinu Tam, Shita of Bein Hashmashot versus the Gaonim, the Gra, the Rav's viewpoint. So he wants my opinion on when he discusses the Rav. So I just left Sherry a letter that I read it. Very nice to me. It's a Talmud who listens to Hashirim, and he's a great Gaon in mathematics, and it appears to me sensible. But I wrote something with the Rav, with sources, but I wrote, it's not my area of expertise. I actually asked them permission if I can make copies and show it to some of my students who may know science better than I do and can look at it and see whether it holds water. It's a very interesting article. And he's written more and he's published more and he intends to publish more. This is his area. Baruch Hashem, in the area of Dine Yishut, I know a little bit. I'm not an Amaretz. We don't have an easy solution. No matter what you do, where you turn. And you see with Israel, where we introduced the clause based upon Rabbi Willick, the RCA, there's opposition among some of the Haredi poskim. They say it's a get musa. I have a lot of problems with it. We can be somach on the Rambam. It's Jews doing forcing to get. It's a Beitin forcing it. It's not Goyim. The halacha, the Rambam paskins, even if you have Goyim, beat the hell out of the guy. As long as the Beitin forces him. It's in Perek Bet, Hilchot Geirushin. You can look it up. I think it's halacha chaf. It's at the end. but we don't have an easy solution. We've tried. And a get has to be given meiratzon, and we can't change it. So people, why this? I told you in class when I gave that shiur on Rabbi Rachman, I said the problem with Rabbi Rachman is he left the impression that it's the rabbis who don't like the solution. The problem is we don't have. It's not that you're going to be mafkir kedushin. There's halacha. We can't change the halacha. And it's not Western civilization. Western civilization, the man gives the girl a ring, the girl gives the man a ring. You understand? With us, it's different. The man has to give the girl, and he marries her, he takes her. It's a totally different concept, and we can't change it. And this is as the Rav used to say, halacha is beautiful, but people ruin it. You come up with cruel people. On the other hand, I have to tell you, there's a Jew in the Five Towns in Lawrence who has given away millions of his own money for people to pay off husbands to get a get. So, you know, you talk of a Jew, like Reb Lazer Suva said to Wiesenthal, why don't you look at the other side, okay? Be aware. And this is absolutely factual. But here, they came up with this proposal, and it engendered a tremendous storm. And here's Rabbi Aaron Cutler speaking at the RCA, at the Agudas Rabbanim Convention, to our sorrow. There is widespread misunderstanding about Judaism. Many think that just as there are differences between Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews, there are likewise divergences between conservative and reform. In truth, there is no such comparison. There is no difference between reform and conservative, since both deny the divine revelation of Torah. They therefore both annul Torah precepts and the basis of our religion. Their spiritual leaders constantly lead our people astray. One is not permitted to aid them nor to justify their actions in any ways. It's my translation from the Hebrew in Hapades, their translation from Rabaran's Yiddish at the convention. And I have to tell you, you don't realize how true these words are. Bididei Haviyuvda. God leads you in a certain way. And I have to be honest, not everyone has my feeling for Russian Jews. When I first met Yomo, he knows I hugged him and kissed him. That's the way God led me. I wound up the Mossad, Russia, and all that went with it. So out in the coast, and when I was younger, I visited the coast. I'm talking the West Coast. When we say the coast, New Yorkers say the coast, they mean the other coast, the West Coast. I visited the West Coast quite a few times. I was invited a few times recently. It just didn't work out. But you're younger, you have more strength, more energy, and you can travel in economy class with no room to breathe. A little older, it gets harder for your feet. So I got to know some Russians on the coast. Quite a few wound up there. And there was this family, this lady from Minsk, with Jewish feeling. And her husband, children, and they belong to a conservative temple, with all that that implies. And I said to her, why don't you go to an Orthodox shul? She said, it's too far away. So I said, move. She said, no. And they weren't living in any luxury. She said, but my rabbi tells me it's permissible for us to drive to the temple on Shabbat. And she remains where she was. I don't know what happened. This conversation probably was 20 years ago. But it hurt me. My rabbi says you can drive on Shabbat. And you see here, Rabaran, these words, and this takes us back to Synagogue Council. And this takes us back to the example I gave you of these Judaic conferences, Limud, where you have Harav Lam is giving a shiur in room 101. In room 102, some lady who is not Jewish, only her father is, who's a lesbian, who's a humanist, who doesn't believe in God, she is a Reform rabbi, and she's giving a lecture in room 102. Okay, you're leaving an impression. This is the heart of the issue. And there's no easy answer. I challenge anyone, because the Satmaruv also is interested in seeing that Reformed Jew become Shomer Shabbat. On the other hand, where do you draw the line? How do you make the message clear? How do you keep communication? Or no, do we have to raise our hands and say, Hitzalti at Nafshi, V'shalom al Yisrael? And here you got to give Chabad credit. Chabad has been able to accomplish what RCA couldn't accomplish, what Agudas HaRabbanim couldn't accomplish. They can go all over the world. No one will attempt to reform their synagogues. They know that this is part of Chabad, just as they have a beard and a bekeshul on Shabbos and a certain black hat that resembles the black hat with the same kvetch, the knitch, whatever they call it, that the Rebbe used to go. The shul has to have a machitza, and they have to daven an Orthodox davening. And all over the world, Jews are attracted. So cynics will say they don't charge membership fees, they don't charge this. All I know is people get involved with Chabad. They wind up giving millions, tens of millions to Chabad. You see at their dinner of the shluchim, who paid for it, the main money, millions of dollars, a Jew from Russia who became firm through Chabad, and he's paying them back, a multi-billionaire. You take Roa, the Roa family, how did they get involved? They saw what Chabad was doing in South America, creating Jews. They joined. They're not Chabadnikim, but they're part and parcel of Chabad. Helped them immensely. Money, reaching out, doing what they do. Chabad, you got to give credit. Look what I just said. Think about it. They somehow can talk. And I have to tell you, there's now on the board of governors of the Jewish Agency a Chabad Shaluach from the West Coast, very successful, Orange County, I believe it is. And he is one of the members of the board, first time ever. A Chabadnik, a Rav, with a line of bud, with the Chabad look. But married to a student of mine, all right, maybe that also helps. And he's very successful. And he knows, he tells me, sometimes he'll argue with them, but always with a joke. You follow, always in a nice way. Sometimes he'll be quiet, because he sees you can't change anything. But this is Chabad. All right. Let me go one step further and give you a gift for coming today. And this too reflects and captures the era. Captures the era. Simon, how is Shimmy doing? Are you in touch with him?
Yeah, I was in the guest last week. Please see us all.
Do me a favor, send him my best regards. Tell him I miss him, but he should grow and become great in Torah and Yerut Shemayim. Okay? And now I'll give you a gift. Dove, would you care to guess how many times I've been asked why the Rav never visited Israel after 1935? What do you say?
Hundreds.
You got it. Maybe thousands. Man, why didn't the Rav? There are many reasons we can give. It could be the truth is he was on in years, he didn't feel well, he lost his wife, he never got over that tragedy. But you know what the heart of the reason is? Blood is thicker than mud. Yours truly, in Israel, and I'm admitting it in public, give charity. I will only give to yeshiva organizations where the youngsters serve in the army. In America, I gave charity to Brisk. The Rav would finish his shiur, public shiur, RCA, and he would stay looking us right in the eye, Chaim Olish Betnish for my geld, I never asked you for money. But I want to ask you for my uncle. We have to keep Brisk alive in Yerushalayim. And the Rabbanim, we would all write out checks. Very interesting. Brisk in Yerushalayim. Not exactly Mizrachiites. I got news for you, Yomo. Not exactly a Gudistim either. Very close to Satma and even Eder, and of course Eder Charedit, where they really fit in. But Brisk is a world unto themselves. By the way, now the fourth generation in Israel, they're about a little bit closer to Agudat Yisrael. One of the big machas in Yerushalayim is the Soloveitchik of Agudat Yisrael. It's interesting. But going back to the 50s, the 60s, and here's the Rav, honorary president of the Mizrahi movement, the man who gave the drusha kol do di do fake, and collecting money for Bris. Blood is thicker than mud. Can anyone guess what I'm going to say next? Dove, have you ever walked to the center of Jerusalem, Kikar Tzofat, known in English as Paris Square?
No.
You know what I'm talking about? Where the fountains are, the King's Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
That's Paris Square, Kikar Tzofat. All the demonstrations are what used to go on there over the years. Please, sometimes I laughed, sometimes I cried when I walked by. Remember the women in black? Oh, God.
They're still there.
Wow. So you keep on walking. When I came in Aliyah, there was a building there that was second to the Kotel. They say that building is in mourning because it lost number one to the Kotel. Heichal Shlomo, built by the wealthy Jew from London, I believe a man who involves, what's it, Marks and Spence, a wealthy Jew, and gave a fortune of money to Israel, has family living here. What that man did, wow, Wolfson. And he built Heichal Shlomo. Okay. Heichal Shlomo he built. Look at the building next time you walk by. And you'll see a terrace, a round terrace, sticking out. Look at it. You know what that was for? For the chief rabbi to bless the thousands that would assemble to receive his blessings. Like Lahavdil, the Pope in Vatican City. That's what the plan was. More than that, they built a central location for the Beit Din, and you take a look, it's a semi-circle. Know who learned Masechet Sanhedrin? The judges have to be able to see each other's face as they're debating an issue. It's part of the visual contact that is so important between Dibur Chaverim, Pilpul Chaverim, and the Talmud Rebbe relationship. A semi-circle. No Hu Asid stepping into Heichal Shlomo. The Briska Rav. The Briska family. Rav Velvel, Rav Chaim's surviving son. Rav Velvel, the Rav's uncle. Rav Velvel, with whom the Rav had been so close, speaking and learning when he was in Poland. You want to know why the Rav didn't visit Israel? Now you just think for a minute. The Rav is coming to Israel, the great Mizrahi leader. Can he avoid going into Heichal Shlomo at that time? Forget about today. Today Heichal Shlomo is gone. It's Herzog College. Rabbi Berman could have headed it all up. He gave it up to head up Yeshiva University. So it shows you, Yeshiva University in Washington Heights has more prestige than Heichal Shlomo on Rehov King George than Mekaz Yerushalayim. Right or wrong, the building, hard to believe what became with it. I know my daughter appears before the rabbinic courts and the chief, and she appears before the court of appeals, the chief rabbinic court, the chief rabbi sits there. She has to go to Givat Shaul. Sad what happened. But could you picture the Rav coming and not going into Heichal Shlomo? Impossible. Impossible. Wait a minute. Can you picture the Rav coming after his uncle issued a cherem that went all around the world? And until today the cynics attack Rabbi Yoshev. They have pictures of him sitting in Heichal Shlomo when he was a member of the Beit HaGadol. The Rav is going to go in and spit in his uncle's face? The Briska family? Larry, blood is thicker than mud. And whether you like it or not, in my humble opinion, that's one of the basic reasons why the Rav could never afford the luxury of visiting Israel. Yomo, you want more on this topic? Have you invested in a volume called Washington? Did you read the correspondence I was privileged to publish that would have been lost forever about this campus, this institution, the Rav coming? Correspondence, Rabbi Dr. Leonard Rosenfeld. Do anyone remember him? Son-in-law of Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. Lenny Rosenfeld from the Gush, one of the early settlers, married to Rabbi Leo Young's daughter, and pleading with the Rav to come. And telling him, yeah, they'll demonstrate, they'll yell, they'll shout, when a few months later, it's forgotten. It's true. There are big demonstrations here. They bring the crowds out. People want excitement. I don't know. We get excitement. We go to London to see the Yankee Red Sox. I'm getting a lot of mileage out of those two games, Baruch Hashem. And I figured in yesterday's class, if you're allowed to go, if that's considered the Devar Mitzvah. And I've come away. No, it's a Devar Mitzvah because there's Dibur Chaverim. You'll see with the sources we came up with yesterday. So I'm getting a lot of mileage. But Ribbono Shel Olam, you want excitement? All right, they demonstrate. They put up Paskvilas. The walls of the Satmar Rav said, I believe it's the Satmar Rav said about the walls of Meir Shearim, they're over 130, 40 years old. They're held up by all the Paschvilas that have been pasted up. It's a wall unto itself on top of the original wall. Now, why am I telling you this? My dear students, I remember this like yesterday. The late 50s. They're building Heichal Shlomo. They're announcing their plans, a center for all the Jews in the world. The money is there. It's a poor country. You got to remember how poor this country was when we came in Aliyah. People were telling us what they went through, the 40s, into the 50s, into the 60s. We live here today, all right. I can't say it's a gold mine, but wow. What a difference. They're building Heichal Shlomo. And the Briska family comes out with the Chayrim, the Briska Rav. You have to understand his prestige. He was still alive. And tremendous conflict broke up. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon was then the minister of religion. He was the legendary figure, big Talmud Chacham, wrote many Sfarim, more of historic, agadic nature. You've read some Sarei Hameya, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, the man who organized Mossad Rav Kook, and Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, his original name was Fishman, got along with Ben Gurion. He was one of the signers on the Declaration of Independence. Because of Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, they moved up the ceremony of declaring the State of Israel before Shabbat. The state was actually declared on Friday, not on Saturday. It's because of him. He's the one who makes the Shefiyanu when they read the Declaration. Great Jew. He criticized the Briska Rav. And wow, was there in America, Rabbi Aaron Cutler and others, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon became like Davar HaBatul B'Shishim. Can't talk about him, can't consider him, can't quote him. Oh, what went on? He criticized. Tremendous outcry. And Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, when Reb Lazer Silva jumped into Israel in the late 50s, dedication of the Hebron campus a few blocks from here. Remember I told you the story? He got here late and he lands at the airport, he looks at his watch and it's ceremony's already beginning, and he's in Lod, and he hired a helicopter. Yeah, a blazer found a solution, hired a helicopter, and the helicopter, this was all farmland. You got to remember, there was nothing here. When we came, there was almost nothing here. On the open fields, two blocks from here, suddenly, in the middle of the ceremony, with all the big Rashi Yeshiva, and the Israel Rabbanim, and the Dayanim, a helicopter lands, and out pops Reb Lazer Silva. Just think of the sight. So you should know he was here for less than a day. From the ceremony, he went to visit Rabbi Maimon, who was already in poor health. Ad kedei kach, he didn't allow the cheirim, the yelling, the shouting, the malediction, the paskvailas, to affect him. You see, this was Reb Lazer Silva. Let me end off with the ultimate. Reb Lazer, time moves on, and hits his big birthday, his 80th birthday. And first, the Agudat HaRabbanim honors him. The hotel far Rockaway kosher hotel. I think it was called the Washington Hotel. I may be mistaken. You can correct me if you wish, if I'm wrong. And then the RCA artisan. 80th birthday, RCA. His son, Reb David Leib Silva. His son's Chavruta, Rav Emanuel Rackman. Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. I published the picture in the Silva era. So, the giants of the American rabbinate honoring Rav Blazer Silva. One by one, you can see Rabbi Bernstein is here. Rabbi Charlie Weinberg is here. Wow, Reb David Silva, Reb Emanuel Rackman, one by Reb Avrutik, one after another, the leaders, the greats of the RCA, Pesach Lavovitz, and Reb Lazy gets up to speak. And Reb Lazy says, I'll say it first in Yiddish, then translate, Ich ken the Gemara, as a mol hadmiya anir shakulo kahanim. Lord, that's mol, so mach like this, we get the nice the aliyahs. What's Tutman? We see in the Gemara, Gemara talks about a city entirely of kohanim. And the Gemara raises the issue, what do you do with the aliyah? How do you deal with Kriyat Torah? They're all kohanim. But ich ken nishta Gemara, was ret faman ir shakulo kanayim. But I never heard of a Gemara that talks about a city that is filled only with zealots, with zealotry. And he says, in Europe, there were always a few zealots in every community. But in the Agudas HaRabbanim, there is now a new situation. An organization comprised almost entirely of zealots. Zealotry has its place in life. It's a good word. I've often quoted this. I've often given drushes using this concept. I develop it. But it's not appropriate at all times. Had Pinchas constantly acted in this fashion, he would have never been blessed with God's covenant of peace. And you see, look at Pinchas. Shalom. And you have to have, what? This is God making peace. But it shows you, Pinchas was not a zealot by nature. All right, one time, he had to show zealotry, terrible sin, right in front of his eyes. But that wasn't his basic gestalt, his basic disposition. And this is Reb Lazer Silva. Look where he's speaking. The RCA. This is a time already after the Synagogue Council Chayrim, after the New York Board of Rabbis Chayrim. And here's Reb Lazer Silva. Ich ken from the Gemara anir shakulo kohanim, but ich ken nishta Gemara anir shakulam kanoim. And it's a meritic thought, a meritic insight, but it's a honest commentary on what has happened in the United States. Now, you can't turn back the clock. The right wing's impact in America, indescribable, could have never been predicted. The right wing's ability to change, to inspire, unbelievable. And it shifted the entire emphasis in the United States in the literature world. It's the Rosh Yeshiva, not the practicing rabbi. Finally, one name I didn't mention, but he becomes very active in RCA, in the Agudas HaRabbanim, also not a practicing rabbi, an individual who I met on occasion, not a simple person, Rabbi Simcha Elberg. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Haolam, she'akol yehi bedvaro. Rabbi Simcha Elberg, first of all, for many years, clean shaven. A Polish Yid, Siddiq background. Baki in Kala Torah Kula, photographic memory. Could sit by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, could talk with the Rav. His nephew was a dear student of mine in the 60s. The Elbergs had no children, so he's very close to his nieces and nephews. And he sent me, I have an autographed copy inscribed to me when I was his nephew's Rebbe in Yeshiva Shiva Schochanan from Reb Simcha Elberg about Warsaw. Very fascinating volume, a memoir of what Warsaw was, how he grew up, and what the Holocaust, etc. And he became the Yoshev Rosh of the Var HaPoel of the Agudas HaRabbanim. Rav Simcha Elberg also had a business investment that supported him. He bought the HaPades Rabbinic Journal from Rabbi Pades. Rabbi Pades established it, and it made money. It wasn't something you just published. It was a journal where people put ads in, people put advertisements in, people paid to have their smachot described. In other words, it wasn't totally a journal like Tradition or Chakira, where the subscriptions bring in the money. Here there were subscriptions, but in addition, you had the money that came in from a publication. Today you all know that you could, all newspapers, everything you have published, you can give them out free. The money that you get for the publications is minimal. It's the ads. And today, one of the few things in life which are infinitely cheaper than when I was growing up and Charlie was growing up, publication, print. Today, it's all computerized. You give a computer program, all you're paying for is the paper, and what costs the most is the binding. If you're putting a binding on, that costs more than anything else. It's very fascinating. My first book, they set type. The first edition of Rebel, the type was set by hand. Could you imagine? Today, it's a different world altogether. So, he published Hapades, and you can see his editorials, his op-ed pieces, what he's thinking. And I quote Rabbi Simcha Elberg, "Recent years have seen a marked increase in the number of advanced yeshiva students. However, their attitude to Rabbanim is entirely negative. They are not at all respectful to the Rabbanim. When even the most erudite Rav delivers a lecture on Shabbat before Pesach or Yom Kippur, the yeshiva students do not attend. At times, their attitude is one of mockery and scarcism, if I'm pronouncing it. How do you pronounce it? Sarcasm, that's the word I want. And sarcasm, even towards veteran rabbanim, who are 1,000 times more learned than they are." I just want to see, this is 19, I just want to see if I have a date on this, when it is being, when he published this. Hold on 1 second, footnote 19. 1962. This is right after Rabarin's death. You'll see why next week. And this is what he's publishing. At times, that dude is one of mockery and scars. Help me out, sarcasm, even towards veteran rabbanim, who are 1,000 times more learned than they are. The situation is sad. We are obligated to do all in our power to return the rabbinate to its previous prestige. The only method to accomplish this is through the study of Torah. Rabbanim must indicate that ceaseless Torah study is the basis of our life and existence. There are still glittering examples of such dedication in our generation. The late Gaon, Rabbi Moses Rosen, studied all his life, including the more than 40 years spent in the United States. Even now, there is the Gaon Rav Lazer Silver among us. For many decades, study has not ceased from his lips. And that's Rav Simcha Elberg, and it's a very accurate description. Early 60s, the Baron died 62. This is perhaps right after the Baron's life. And it's an accurate description of where America stood Torah at that moment in time. Can you change back the clock? Unfortunately not. And Ein Hachinami, now so many years later, you look at American Orthodoxy, what is the most important facet? Talmidei Chachamim, what we have achieved, what we know, what we have learned, what we continually study. We don't sit back. We don't want to be said about us what Reb Moshe told his son. It's a good thing these rabbis have a good memory because they haven't opened up a Gemara since they came to the United States. Notice the names he stresses, Reb Moshe Rosen and Reb Lazer Silva. And this is why the Rav was so inanimate of Reb Lazer Silva. He loved the fact that Reb Lazer was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, mainly developed in the United States. Remember what I told you? He came to America in Eloy, but he was not yet a Gaon. But in America, beginning with Harrisburg, he spent endless hours every day learning, studying, writing. And this is where we stand, 1962. The best is yet to come, but we'll leave that for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. So to reiterate, on this beautiful day, they frightened us with the weather, cold but beautiful. They say on Wednesday, Yomo, who's my resident meteorologist, claims that we're going to have some snow here. So we'll nichye v'nireh. I'm not going to bet on it, but if there'll be snow, possible. Okay, possible. And in the Hermon, I'm sure there's snow, but I'm not going to the...
Not major.
All right, minor. Anyone listening, don't come to Yerushalayim. And when it snows here, everyone comes in from the center of the country. I have no idea what goes on just to see the snow. It's an event. So what have we done today? We've taken the Agudas HaRabbanim. We're at the tail end of its existence as a rabbinical organization. The Rosh Yeshiva are taking over. The masses love the Rosh Yeshiva. They are the Lamdanim. They represent Europe. They tie us to our path. They don't have to make compromises. They are our leaders, synagogue council, board of rabbis. What do we have in common with people who are Mechalel Shabbos and people who eat tafis? It's beyond words. When you look at the reform and what's happened to the conservative, you can understand why this question, this chasm, this split, which way to go, haunts us until this very moment and will haunt us again in about 3 minutes from now when I give out the freebies. We've set the stage for next week, what happens at Reb Aaron Cutler's funeral. And once again, Rabbi Elberg in HaPardes, his unbelievable, insightful reaction. And then we go into the final issue dealing with Reb Lazer Silva, Agudas HaRabbanim, a semi-tragic comedy of trying to accommodate all Jews on the Sabbath, and again an issue that haunts us until this very moment. Okay, and now let's move on to the freebies. Here we are. Diverse rabbis say it's time. Simon, do you need credit for this class? You don't need to accept. Okay. By the way, listen 1 minute, because don't think you're a big shot, you're in gris color. The verse rabbis say, time to abolish chief rabbinate. And here's a whole article why the chief rabbinate is horrendous, and we have to recognize all type of Jews. Among those that sign, a graduate of the Kollel, Rabbi Asher Lopatin, Orthodox. The other Orthodox signer is Rabbi Professor Michael Chernik, chair of this whole committee, Orthodox. As far as I know, Professor Chernik teaches at Hebrew Union College, a Jewish Institute of Religion. I wish to be corrected if I'm wrong. And here's many Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, Rabbi Uri Regev, he's Chiddush, whatever that is. And here they're signing that we have to respect each other and give credence to each other and get rid of the chief rabbinate. Unbelievable. And thank God that Baron Cutler is not here to hear this. Gentlemen, are you proud to be Israelis? Israeli medical breakthrough, Tel Aviv University eliminates 70% of cancerous tumors. And they're now working, this is going on to a trial basis, they're setting up here in Israel, setting up in America, and I would ask that this revolutionary development, and even a dummy like myself could read this scientific article and understand it, how it works, it's unbelievable. Please only make it available to countries that have their embassies in Jerusalem. Okay? Anyone who reads Hebrew, very interesting. This is from Rabbi Lamb. They put out a book of collection of Rabbi Lamb's articles, Halachot v'Halichot, it's called. And in the introduction, he writes about his upbringing and where he studied. And there's a beautiful description of Rabbi Lamb studying with the Rav and what the Rav was like in the late 40s. Here's an article on someone whose children I taught, Mr. Michael Rubinoff, and the gift of speech. Someone who studied all the time and how the Lubavitcher Rebbe helps them. Very interesting article. This is a sad article. More than half of Israel's immigrants in 2018 are not recognized as Jews. 54% of new arrivals in doubt. And by the way, another graduate of the Kollel comes out, who works here, organized an organization. He calls for conversion. Don't put up any standards. Just let them convert. Beautiful article on a Jew who not only donated a kidney, it's a Chabad Rav, and now donated part of his liver. And what chesed. An amazing article. The backbone of the Hasidim who got criminal justice reform done. This is a law just passed by the United States, by the Congress and the Senate. Congress 87 to 12, the Senate 358 to 36. If you go to jail, and I've had this with students in jail, to put them within traveling distance of their family, to keep the harm to the wife, to the children, to a minimum. And it goes on and on with all types of innovations that will enable people who go to jail to minimize the social, emotional, psychological suffering of the family. Here's an article from the New York Times, Why Trump Reigns at King Cyrus. Tell me, was I the first one to call him King Cyrus the second or the third, whatever? Maybe the New York Times owes me, I have a copyright. But a very interesting article that the right wing, they don't like his lifestyle, but they like the results of his presidency. Very interesting article, New York Times, by Paul Greenberg, In Search of Lost Screen Time. It's the endless hours we spend on our smartphone and other mobile devices, what we could do with that time. I kept it would say you could probably do half of Shas in 1 year, the time you spend on the technological developments. The Rebbe's letter to someone about New Year's. The New Year has already begun, criticizing someone for saying Happy New Year. Very interesting article, because they find the Rebbe in some other correspondence refers to the New Year, and he justifies himself by citing his source. This is a very disturbing article from the website of Rabbi Dr. Nathan Slifkin, who we've quoted before, and it's unbelievable, and it's validated. Rabbi Chaim Kanevsky's grandson, who runs the Literature World today, he's the one who brings you to Rabbi Chaim, Rabbi Yanky Kanevsky. He's at a party for a Jew. He's drinking with him and friendly with him, and this Jew is now going to jail for endless years for being the biggest pedophile ever caught in the history of the state of Israel. Here's an interesting article on Nathan Lopez Cardoza, because he just had an article in the Jewish, what's it called, the Jerusalem Post. I didn't see it, but I was shown it, told about it. I don't read the Post. I read the Israeli papers. It's part of my minhag since I came in Aliyah, because I think to be part of Israel, you have to know what the Israelis are thinking, not the Anglos who are looking in. Anyway, he just had an article, and he ripped the heck out of Rav Soloveitchik for disappointing him. It's the same theme of David Hartman and Yitz Greenberg. Now, Cardoza, he learned in London. He's in England, not in London. He learned in Gateshead, and he's from Holland originally. A very interesting article. His background, his points of view are far from what I believe to be within the fold. But they're mad at the Rav, that the Rav encouraged them to live in the Western world, but didn't change Judaism to accommodate Western ideas, etc., etc. Calling marrying a Gerusha, right down the line, unbelievable, three people who think the same way. And finally, for Morty, the rules, again, of Bayit Meshutaf, when you need a majority, when you need unanimous, there are all types of halachas here. But not the Beit Din. This was by consent. Everyone agrees, these are experts, and this is from a religious publication. My dear students, if there are no questions, I want to wish Larry Roth Mazel Tov on his daughter's bat mitzvah. He should be zeicha to have much nachat from her, from the other children. Kulam the Torah lechupa lemaisim tovim the lalot arutsa berina, and your wife should give you a kick and say, "Honey, I agree. I have to become a total Jewess, and there's only one place in the world where you can do it." And if anyone can understand the politics going on here, I will give you a medal. You may be a Harvard PhD, and I may be a Talmud of the Rav, and Morty may be from what's it, George Washington University. I have to admit, it's beyond me. Dov, you're a newcomer. I'm here 50 years, but there's never been a time like this. But halavai, by the time elections come, I'll have a proud opinion, and I'll let you know what I think. But until then, I am as confused as everyone else. Until we meet again, in health and happiness, das vidanya. Jack, your questions.
Okay. Over the years, the Rav Velvel, the Brisker Rav's harem on Hilchos Shlomo. I have an answer, but I don't know if it's from you or I just thought of it myself. Rav Velvel had just said, 71 men sitting in a semicircle claiming to be the Sanhedrin. Rav Maimon claims to have the Smicha return. I don't even have to pay attention to it. It's ridiculous. Why didn't he just say that?
He couldn't. No, so he couldn't say that because people were paying attention.
Okay, so maybe I didn't hear this from you. Now, Brisker has to worry about all the shittos, right?
That's a filter.
What if he would say that? Would he not say to himself, maybe there's a chance of an amelia that really this is a proper Sanhedrin? And if they pusket against what I'm doing, no?
No.
He was not worried that maybe
he was
authentic.
He was convinced that they were shkatzim, remushim.
So why put a harem on something that's of no significance? Why put a harem? What bothered him?
Because it was of great significance. It just wasn't of significance to 2% of the Jewish population.
In and if he could say to himself, this is ridiculous, it's of no importance, but because many, many others might say, "Mate, this could be the Sanhedrin."
Of course, of course.
And some people might accept it, and he was worried
exactly.
For other people, not himself.
Exactly, exactly, okay. Exactly. You're undermining. You're misinterpreting the power of Mizrahi at that time.
Yes,
it was powerful.
This is
And he couldn't just say, who cares about them?
No.
He couldn't say that?
No.
He had to, okay. Next point, Rav Gedalia Felder Zatzal.
Right.
He was a shul rabbi, and he was a chief rabbi of Toronto as long as he was alive and good health. He was it.
No.
Once he's gone, that
was it. Toronto was an exception. Rav Gedalia Felder.
He was the last of the movie. He held on.
Right.
Okay. Another. It was remarkable how, no matter who they were, all the Rosh Yeshiva, all the Kollel, the Reichman with their Kollel, nobody could say boo to Rabbi Felder, who was a shul rabbi.
I would say, go on up there.
Nobody dared. Okay. Uncle Davy,
Auntie's
Uncle Davy Rosenzweig, had a client, a woman, who was here in Yerushalayim from the time of the British and never learned Hebrew.
Time of the British.
Time of the British.
1940s, you say.
She was maybe British, I don't know, but she never learned Hebrew.
All right, that supports my point.
It impressed my Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave was very impressed with her. Very impressed, okay.
All right.
That's about it, I guess.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Wasn't there any way there could be some kind of prohibition from claiming money to give a get?
Prohibition?
So couldn't the rabbonim have put in a prohibition to say if you can't claim money for a get?
Yes, so what? He doesn't give the get. He says, go to hell. I want the money.
It just takes away that incentive. It's like, well, it's not worth the effort to... And I'm not going to get anything out of it, so...
No, but he's not going to listen. I mean, halavai you could say that, but he's not going to listen. He's going to spit in your face. Like a Gilgul Neshama, who do you know? You follow? No, he's not going to listen.
My father-in-law Zatzal was very upset. He was a shul rabbi that the Rosh Yeshiva were taking over the rabbis. And as a young man, he would tell me this. I didn't really understand
what he's saying.
So the Rosh Yeshiva are taking over, and the shul rabbis are no longer as important. But now I guess I understand.
I should hope so. But by the way, tell Letty her uncle was on that plane in Lebanon. That I took a few rabbis with General Navon into Lebanon to give the money to Marjal Yun, to give the money to the priest.
Okay.
79. He was on the plane. He was on the plane. Mark, I greatly appreciate it. Okay, it's Mamash. You have no idea what a chesed. The letter will mean something to them.
Okay.
We go back with the lady who died to her earliest childhood. She, she went through hell in life. She was married to Rav Menashe Klein's son. And she had a baby, a boy. She never saw the boy again after the birth. He had it declared. He was a doctor. Had it declared insane. 3 years went by, and the law in Canada is: if you don't see your child for 3 years, the other parent can claim total possession. And then he gave her a get, and she was broken in spirit. And her aunt and uncle were no longer alive. Sadiqim from far Rockaway, who were teaching in the day schools there, they took her in. She worked in computers in the public library system. And Mark and I, whenever we were in New York, we'd go to spend a day with her to give her chizuk. Very bright girl, beautiful girl in New York. And then someone made a shidduch with this Rebbe's son, who never really found himself. He was teaching in the Machi, made the shidduch, Shapiro. And they blossomed, he became the Besetzner Rebbe. And am I pronouncing it right, Yom?
Piazetzner.
How do you pronounce it?
Piazetzner.
Piazetzner, Rebbe.
In my B'Shemesh.
And it was his uncle was the famous what's the shoe called?
Eish Kodesh,
and they have many children together. And we went. You should know to Reb Menashe Klein. Can you help us? He broke down and cried. He said, "What my son is doing to her is what my wife did to me. He never saw the son again after the birth. She ran off with him."
It's unbelievable. When you look at the Menashe Klein Sfarim, you'll see the introduction, particularly look at the 18th volume, which is put out posthumously, about all this children. You see one child from the first wife, doctor, medical doctor. All the other children are Rebbeim, Rashi Yeshiva, you follow from the second wife. But it doesn't tell the story, but that's the story. And that explains to you why Reb Moshe Klein has a certain enmity for women. And it reflects, there's a certain, I told the story in class, he came up with an idea once, they wanted to kill him, because it would, any maneuver could create havoc for women. You go around saying, oh, a guy split off from his wife, and he now announces, I married off my daughter when she was 12. Or when she was 11. Father has a right, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to tell you to who. Follow?
Yeah.
And he came up, no Amoritz could come up with this. This had to be, and they traced it to him. They traced it to him. When you know my story, you understand why he was... Follow? Larry, let me tell you something. Yeah. It's not good to know too much. It's a pasuk in Kohelet.
I just love what you're doing in the history share. It was so important in their day, but everyone's forgotten.
That's life.
But for their families,
us,
it's really a big covet of what you're doing.
No, Baruch Hashem. And you should know that your uncle was on the plane.
I know that he and my aunt went to Mar Jayun, and Norman Lamb was on that plane.
So that's me who took them.
Honest?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. My
aunt loves to talk about that trip.
All right. It was one of a kind. And
they were on that flight.
Yeah. Wow. There were 8-9 seats. So the general was on the plane, his aide-de-camp.
Yeah.
And myself. Manny, your uncle, could be Norma and your aunt. It's a long time ago. It's 1979 approximately.
Was it?
Yeah, we went to Mar Jayun, and we were giving the money to the priest. This is when we were supporting the South Lebanese army. And we wanted some publicity how Israel's helping religion there. And I still remember there were kids running and playing. They weren't normal. They didn't have any school for them. And you could see these kids were abnormal. I remember like yesterday.
So would my uncle have been on that flight because he was head of the RCA at the time? Like,
because
how did he even get to that?
Because Rakatfit asked him.
Really?
Because he was active. I needed people from the RCA who were in Israel at that moment.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the story.
It was a real chaviyah for them.
Yeah, it's a real chaviyah for anyone.
Yeah.
And for many years, kids thought
that
I was on.
Remind my uncle.
My kids thought I was on a helicopter. I told them no, it was a light plane.
I thought it was a helicopter.
No, it was a plane. It was a two-propeller plane.
Interesting.
Two propellers.
So Malka wasn't on this flight.
I don't think so. It's so many years. I'd have to look at pictures, but I don't think so. I think she was with the kids. The kids were too young for me. These people were touring, and I had little kids at home.
Wow,
time marches on. Anyway, in Haifa, they didn't even... They gave me... I'm being a Sadiq Edition for my grandson. So, Yerushalayim, they know me. But I'm being a Sadiq Edition in Haifa. I was a Sadiq Edition there last in 71 or 72. Yehuda Singer, if you know him. His wedding. So you have to write a letter, because I'm not in the rabbinate, I'm an outsider. But I sent Rav Unterman's authorization for me. But I also added a postscript, B'mokom Shem Makirim Oto, paraphrasing the Gemara, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, B'mokom Shem Makirim Oto, I said you can check with the widow of the chief rabbi, Shayesha Kohn's wife, Naomi Akoin, knows me very well for many, many generations. So my grandson said right away, they said, oh, it's no problem, Your Honor. I was from Sada Kedushin in Modiin for another grandson, and the chief rabbi, he was chief rabbi already. He was very close to the girl's father. So he was at the wedding, and he saw my Sada Kedushin, he was impressed. I said, where do you think I'm coming from? I'm coming from the rabbi. I know what I'm doing. It's not I once was at a wedding and I was masadded the tanoim, a small matter. Forget whose wedding. So there were some Israelis there, young rabbonim. They were so impressed. No one knows what tanoim are, what it represents. Oh, the era. It's no big Torah.
We had tanoim. Family wanted to make an engagement party, and my father-in-law said, "We're going to make an engagement party."
We had tanoim too. Martha and I had real tanoim.
He said it can't just be a party. It has to
right, exactly. Exactly.
You have a bat mitzvah?
Yes.
Well before the wedding, right?
A year before. The truth was, we wanted to get married a half year, but Yoredeya was so overwhelming.
What made you decide to have a party and do the tanoim?
Like you just said, you can't just have a party.
You have to have
a party with a reason. Right.
Purpose.
I have to go down to Sherry and get back to the real world. As they say.
Anybody do that today?
Tanoim are very rare today. They break up. They have
a party, a gathering.
It's rare. It's rare. Today you don't do tanoim at all, or you do it right before the wedding when it's a joke.
And you say it makes no sense.
You're right. It's a joke. Okay, now, my dear Yomo, you upload and you leave it in my box, and you let me know. I appreciated your email. Do you need a lift today?